Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am now in Numbers chapter 18, verses 1 through 32, the entire chapter I will cover. And we'll name this chapter Duties of the Priest and the Levites. Our context is this. In chapter 17, we saw the incident of the contest with the rods, and Aaron, representing his family in the tribe of Levi, won that contest because his rod budded, thus buttressing his authority as the true Levitical legal priest, as opposed to the Kohathites, of whom Korah was a leading member until he got toasted for his rebellion. So that was our context. And now we'll start in Numbers chapter 18, verse 1. The Lord said to Aaron, "You, your sons, and your ancestral house will be responsible for sin against the sanctuary. You and your sons will be responsible for sin involving your priesthood." Now, Aaron and his sons, of course, refers to the priest, because the priests were in Aaron's family. Aaron, of course, was a family of the tribe of Levi. The other three families were Levites, or called Levites. Even though Aaron is technically a Levite, he's not called that. He's called, Aaron and his sons are called the priest, and the other three families of the tribe of Levi are the Levites. Now notice that Moses is not spoken to here. How many times do we see the Lord said to Moses, the Lord said to Moses, or the Lord said to Moses and Aaron? This time it's just the Lord said to Aaron. Why? Well, because the following instructions were concerning the priesthood, and Aaron was, of course, in charge of the priesthood. He was also in charge of the Levites who helped the priest. Now, God says to Aaron and your sons, that's the priests, and your ancestral house, that's the Levites. So there's your distinction there between the priest and the Levites. And as I said, Aaron was a Levite too, but he's not a Levite in the sense that it's normally used. He wasn't a Levite in the sense of serving the temple Levite. He was tribally a Levite because his father was Amram, who was also Moses' father. So Aaron and Moses were brothers. And Amram, of course, was a Levite. So Aaron is of the tribe of Levi, even though he's a particular family. And that particular family is where the priest came from. Now, when it says that Aaron and the Levites will be responsible for sin against the sanctuary, that means they have to make atonement, sin offerings and so forth, expiations for any violations that would be done. And, of course, that would give security to the rebels who were mentioned in chapter 17. If you recall, these rebels who had rebelled against Aaron, there were some Reubenites that did that, Kohathites, a family of Levites headed by Korah, Korah's rebellion. And then, of course, they had the contest of the sticks, the almond buds. And when the people finally got it through their head, man, God wants the sons of Aaron to be the priests. We read in Numbers 17, verse 12, "Then the sons of Israel spoke to Moses, saying, 'Behold, we perish, we are dying, we are all dying,'" because they had stood up against Moses, God, and Aaron. But now it's clear that nobody else is going to be responsible for sin according to the sanctuary. No other tribe, of all the tribes that were involved in the rebellion, and all 12 were, all other 11 were, they're not going to be responsible. It's going to be the tribe of Levi, Aaron and his sons, the priest, as well as the other three families of the tribe of Levi. They're going to be responsible for sin. Now, there's two types of sin mentioned here. There's sin against the sanctuary. That's mentioned in the first part of the verse. You, sons of Aaron, and you, Levites, will be responsible for sin against the sanctuary. An example of that might be not keeping polluted people out as they enter into the sanctuary. And they will also, Aaron and his sons and the Levites, will be responsible for sin involving the priesthood. Well, excuse me, that's not the Levites. That's the sons of Aaron. The priest will be responsible for sin involving your priesthood. Let me back up a minute here. The sons of Aaron, the priest, and your ancestral house, that's the Levites. So the priest and the Levites are responsible for sin against the sanctuary. If a Levite's standing guard and lets a polluted person or a non-Levite enter into the courtyard, or a non-priest enter into the sanctuary, if they did something like that, then both of them are liable, the priest and the Levites. But now, the last part of the verse, you and your sons, that's the priest, are going to be responsible for sin involving your priesthood. And that's a different type of sin, a sin connected with the priesthood rather than the sanctuary itself. And, of course, it's very easy to violate that kind of law. For example, touching a corpse during a funeral, then you come in and you try to offer a sin offering. Well, that would be the sons of Aaron. The priest would be liable for that. We go down to Numbers 18, verses 2 and 3. "But bring with you God continues to speak to Aaron. Bring with you also your brothers, the tribe of Levi, the tribe of your father, that they may join with you, that they may be joined with you and serve you, while you and your sons with you are before the tent of the testimony. And they shall thus attend to your obligation and the obligation of all the tent, but they shall not come near to the furnishings of the sanctuary and the altar, or both they and you will die. Now when God tells Aaron to bring your brothers, the tribe of Levi, he's saying bring them into the courtyard. The Levites couldn't, of course, go any further than that. They couldn't go into the holy place, but they could go into the courtyard. So this is where they're supposed to go, so that they may be joined with you, joined with Aaron. That's a play on words. Levi comes from a Hebrew word, which means to join. And so they're going to be joined with the priest. The Levites, the ordinary Levites, are going to be joined with the special Levites, the priest. Now, they're all called into the courtyard. Of course, that must be the leaders. You can't get a whole tribe of Levi into the courtyard all at the same time. Verse 2, God tells Aaron that the Levites will serve you. How did the Levites serve the priest? Well, they burned incense on the altar. They skinned and killed the sacrifices that were brought into the courtyard by the people. It was the Levites that did the skinning and the killing. They did a lot of other stuff too, but that was the main service they did. Verse 3, they shall thus attend to your obligation. What is the obligation of the priest? Well, here's the basic, just to summarize. They burned incense on the golden altar of incense in the holy place. They arranged and changed the showbread, the bread of the presence, in the holy place. They trimmed the lamps of the candlestick in the holy place. They did all that, not the Levites. But who gets all the oil ready? Who stores it? Who watches out for it? And the incense, who makes the incense? Who mixes all that myrrh and frankincense and salt and all that stuff that goes into the incense? Who does all that? Probably the Levites. Verse 3 says, the Levites shall not come near to the furnishings of the sanctuary. The furnishings, that would be the Holy of Holies. It would be the Ark of the Covenant in the Holy of Holies. In the holy place, it would be the table of showbread, table of the bread of the presence, the candlestick, and the golden altar of incense. No, the Levites don't have anything to do with that. Verse 3 says, the Levites shall not come near to the altar. Which altar is being referred to? Well, could be the altar of burnt offering. They weren't supposed to touch that. It could be the altar of incense. They weren't supposed to touch that either. Whichever altar it was, they weren't allowed to touch it. Only the priest did that. Now, if the Levites touch the altar, came near to the altar, and I assume that means touches it, and if they touched any of the furnishings in the holy place, it says they will die, but it also says both they and you will die. In other words, if a priest negligently allowed a Levite into the holy place to touch something he wasn't supposed to touch, or if the Levite touched one of those altars, the priest responsible died also. This is serious business to be in charge of this tabernacle. It's no light matter. In fact, it's kind of frightening. We go down to Numbers 18, verses 4 through 7. They shall be joined with you and attend to the obligations of the tent of meeting for all the service of the tent. Now, of course, the tent of meeting or the tent of the testimony is talking about the tabernacle. That's where they met, so it's where God met with them. That's why it's called the tent of meeting. It was called the tent of the testimony because that's where the testimony, i.e. the tablets of the law, were kept in the Holy of Holies in the Ark of the Covenant. So that's why it's called tent of meeting or tent of the testimony. So verse 4, let me read it again. They, that's the Levites, shall be joined with you, with the priest, and attend to the obligations of the tent of meeting for all the service of the tent. But an outsider may not come near you. So you shall attend to the obligations of the sanctuary and the obligations of the altar, so that there will no longer be wrath on the sons of Israel. Notice that. You don't do God's service. Wrath from God comes on the people. This is important. Verse 6, Numbers 18. Behold, I myself have taken your fellow Levites from among the sons of Israel. They are a gift to you, dedicated to the Lord, to perform the service for the tent of meeting. But you and your sons with you shall attend to your priesthood for everything concerning the altar and inside the veil, and you are to perform service. I am giving you the priesthood as a bestowed service, but the outsider who comes near shall be put to death. Who's an outsider? Well, it could refer to a non-Levite, or it could refer to anyone not a priest, including a Levite who was not a priest. Either way, these people who were not priests can't touch things that are holy. They're not supposed to come near. The Levites could come sort of near. They could help the priests do their obligations. But an outsider couldn't do what the Levites were doing. Now, I know that women and servants and children could not go through the doorway of the courtyard. I'm not sure whether non-Levites could go through that doorway. Male non-Levites could go through that doorway. But at any rate, the duties of the Levites and the priest are delineated here. The Levites are said to be a gift in verse 6 to the priest. Numbers 3, 7 through 9 backs that up. They, that's the Levites, shall perform the duties for him and for the whole congregation before the tent of meeting, the duties for Aaron, to do the service of the tabernacle. They shall also keep all the furnishings of the tent of meeting, along with the duties of the sons of Israel, to do the service of the tabernacle. You shall give the Levites to Aaron and to his sons. They are wholly given to him from among the sons of Israel. So Numbers 3 and Numbers 18 are two places where the Levites are said to be gifts to the priest. The priesthood itself is said to be a gift to the Aaronites, to the family of Aaron. Verse 7 here in Numbers 18 says, I am giving you the priesthood as a bestowed service. Now that's interesting. It sounds like it was a very onerous job that they had, a very dangerous job, but nonetheless, it was considered a gift. The application for that today would be this. Our duties in the New Testament temple, the church, should be considered a gift. Well, yes, we're supposed to do a lot of things in service to the Lord, but it's a wonderful joy to be able to do those things because we're serving the King, we're serving our Master, and He rewards us magnificently for such service. Now, verse 7 says that you and your sons with you shall attend to your priesthood for everything concerning the altar. Which altar? Well, it could be the golden altar of incense. Some people say, the pulpit commentary says it's the bronze altar of burnt offering. Because the priest had to deal with both of those altars, so it's not really clear. It also says that the priest, the family of Aaron, shall deal with everything that's inside the veil. Now, that's another ambiguity because there was two veils. There was the outer veil that separated the holy place from the courtyard, and there was the inner veil that separated the holy place from the Holy of Holies. The Cambridge commentator says that this veil that's being referred to here refers to the curtain between the courtyard and the holy place, the first veil. Whereas Ellicott, the learned commentator, says no, the veil here is the inner veil between the holy place and the Holy of Holies. And Ellicott says the word which is employed in this place, parcheth, is used only of the second veil, the inner veil. Well, I don't know what Moses meant when he wrote this verse, but it doesn't matter because obviously the priesthood does concern everything about the altar and everything in the holy place, if the veil is the outer veil, or everything inside the Holy of Holies, if the veil referred to is the inner veil. Doesn't matter. The priests are the ones who do that. In fact, if you want to summarize the priestly duties, just think of it this way. From altar to altar, from the bronze altar on the outside to the golden altar on the inside, the priests do. And then, of course, the high priest deals with in the Holy of Holies, which is on the Day of Atonement. But the normal priestly duties, the daily priestly duties, is from altar to altar. We go now to Numbers chapter 18, verses 8 through 11. Then the Lord spoke to Aaron, Now behold, I myself have given you charge of my offerings, even all the holy gifts of the sons of Israel. I have given them to you as a portion, and to your sons as a perpetual allotment. This shall be yours from the most holy gifts reserved from the fire. Every offering of theirs, even every grain offering, and every sin offering, and every guilt offering, which they shall render to me, shall be most holy for you and for your sons. As the most holy gifts, you shall eat it. Every male shall eat it. It shall be holy to you. This also is yours, the offering of their gift, even all the wave offerings of the sons of Israel. I have given them to you and to your sons and daughters with you as a perpetual allotment. Every one of your household who is clean may eat of it. You may have noticed verse 10 says all the males can eat it. In verse 11, all the daughters can eat it. We need to explain that. Well, first of all, as a general statement, verses 8 through 11 is just a summary of what the priests are commanded to be given in Leviticus chapter 1. And so just for convenience, rather than going through every word here in our verses, Numbers 18, 8 through 11, I'm just going to recapitulate what we saw in Leviticus chapter 1. The heave shoulder of the peace offering went to the priest. Leviticus 7:34, For I have taken the priest of the wave offering and the thigh of the contribution, that's the the way that worked was if you had a peace offering, which was shared between the priest and the offeror, and they ate the food together at the doorway of the tent of meeting, in the courtyard, or perhaps they went back into their homes out into the camp. I'm not exactly sure which, but the peace offering was shared. Now, the right front thigh was given to the officiating priest. The breast of the peace offering was waved and given to the priest at large. It went into the kitty so that any priest could eat it. And the thigh was heaved, lifted straight up and down. The wave went left, right, front, back, most probably. So the officiating priest got to eat. Again, the whole purpose of this is talking about the support of the priest. All right, so the priest got the heave offering of the right shoulder. They got the wave offering of they got the breast of the wave offering from the peace offering. They also got first fruits from the festival of first fruits. That's barley, and at the Feast of Weeks, it was wheat, barley during the Feast of the Unleavened Bread. Those first fruits made into a cake, and the priest got to eat them. How about the grain offerings? They went to the priest. Leviticus 6:14-16. Now this is the law of the grain offering. The sons of Aaron shall present it before the Lord in front of the altar. Then one of them shall lift up from it a handful of the fine flour of the grain offering with its oil and all the incense that is on the grain offering. And he shall offer it up on the smoke of the altar. Verse 16. What is left of it, Aaron and his sons are to eat. So they just put a memorial portion of grain and oil on the fire. It burned up on the bronze altar. And then the rest of it, the priest ate in the courtyard. It shall be eaten as unleavened cakes in a holy place. They are to eat it in the court of the tent of meeting. All right, that's grain offerings. How about the sin offerings? Now, most sin offerings were done for the people, not for the high priest. And the high priest is different. The whole sin offering is eaten up. But in an ordinary sin offering, the fat was put on the altar, and that went to God. The rest of the food was eaten by the priest in the court. In the courtyard, the court of the tent of meeting. We see this in Leviticus 6:25-26. Speak to Aaron and to his sons, saying, this is the law of the sin offering. In the place where the burnt offering is slain, that was to the north of the altar, bronze altar, burns the altar of burnt offering. That's where the burnt offering was slain. In that place shall be the sin offering shall be slain in the same place. It is most holy, that place. And then verse 26, Leviticus 6, the priest who offers it for sin shall eat it. It shall be eaten in a holy place in the court of the tent of meeting. So the priest identifies with the sacrifice by eating it. Of course, this also gives them something to eat that they don't have to pay for. Now that was the sin offering. How about the guilt offering? King James calls it the trespass offering. Of course, as usual, the fat goes up on the altar. Now, let me go back to the sin offering. If it was a sin offering for the high priest or for the whole congregation, there was no food to eat. It was all put up on the altar and burnt. But ordinary sin offerings, only the fat was burnt. The rest, the priest got to eat. Guilt offering, fat again, put on the altar, offered up to God. But the rest of the guilt offering is given to the priest, eaten in a holy place. Let me read that, Leviticus 7:5-7. The priest shall offer them up in smoke on the altar as an offering by fire to the Lord. It is a guilt offering. Every male among the priest may eat of it. Every male among the priest may eat of it. So the trespass offering, the guilt offering, is eaten. It shall be eaten in a holy place. It is most holy. The guilt offering is like the sin offering. I don't need to read that. All right, so now we have the priest eating the trespass offering. Now, how about the skin of the burnt offering? Now, the burnt offering is a whole burnt offering. All of the meat goes up on smoke, but they took the skin and gave it to the priest. Leviticus 7:8. Also, the priest who presents any man's burnt offering, that priest shall have for himself the skin of the burnt offering which he has presented. And John Gill finishes it all off by saying that other holy things in general that were dedicated to the temple went to the priest. I'm not exactly sure what he means, but I'm sure that anything voluntarily that was given to the tabernacle to the priest went to the priest. They were in charge of it. Now, if it was given to the tabernacle, of course, for the repair of the tabernacle or some kind of gold or silver utensil to be used in the tabernacle, the priest wouldn't get a hold of that. That was meant for the tabernacle. But if it was given for a priest, or maybe for the upkeep or the repair of the tabernacle, but if it was just a general offering, just say a money offering that went into the horn there, the contribution horn, trumpet, well, the priest got to keep that too. So the priests were well taken care of. Now, verse 10 mentions something that's kind of interesting. It says, the most holy gifts, you shall eat it. Every male shall eat it. But then in verse 11, it just mentions wave offerings, which comes from peace offerings. Your sons and daughters shall eat it. And everyone in your household shall eat it. How do we make the distinction? Well, the distinction is this. The sin offerings and the trespass offerings that had to be eaten in the courtyard, those are the most holy gifts. And only males could eat that because there were no women allowed in the courtyard. But then the peace offerings, the wave offerings, could be taken into the homes of the priest and or into the homes of the offeror. And then everybody in the priest's family could eat, the sons and the daughters as well. And servants too. It says everyone of your household who is clean may eat of it. So there's your distinction between most holy gifts, sin offerings, trespass offerings, had to be eaten in a holy place, the courtyard. But the gifts that are just holy, they're not most holy, but they're just holy, they may be eaten at home outside the courtyard. John Gill, using rabbinic terminology, he says that the things which are merely holy, not most holy, but just holy, the rabbis refer to those things as the less holy things or the lighter holy things. We go now to Numbers 18, verses 12 through 14. All the best of the fresh oil and all the best of the fresh wine and of the grain, the first fruits of those which they give to the Lord, I give them to you, talking about to the priest, Aaron's family, the first ripe fruits of all that is in their land which they bring to the Lord shall be yours. Every one of your household who is clean may eat it. Every devoted thing in Israel shall be yours. Now, how much wine and oil and grain is to be given is not stated, is not specified. It just says all of it. Well, all the best of it. Now, the best items of food were thus associated with food for the priest. They got the best, the choice portions. I've already mentioned that they got the first fruits, and it says so explicitly here in verse 13, the first ripe fruits, the first fruits go, actually, they're dedicated to the Lord, but the Lord then gives them right back to the priest. They bring it to the Lord. Let me read that. Verse 13. The first ripe fruits of all that is in their land which they bring to the Lord shall be yours. So it goes to God, then it goes to the priest. So not only sacrificial animals as in the previous several verses, but also here in verses 12 through 14, the first fruits go to the priest. Now verse 14 says, every devoted thing in Israel shall be yours. John Gill says that all things devoted to the temple belong to the priests unless they were devoted to certain uses like temple repair. I just mentioned that. If it was just a general contribution, it went to the priest, not to the temple. Jameson Foster Brown puts another condition on it. It says that anything given to the devoted to the temple or devoted to God, if it was a consumable thing, it went to the priest. But if it was a gold or silver vessel, for example, that was used for adornment or for something for the repair of the building, something that was hard, not consumable, that went to the temple, not to the priest. We go now to Numbers 18, verses 15 through 18. Every first issue of the womb of all flesh, whether man or animal, which they offer to the Lord shall be yours. All right, we've gone from first fruits of vegetable life. Now we're going to firstborn of animal life. Verse 15, every first issue of the womb of all flesh, whether man or animal, which they offer to the Lord shall be yours. In other words, belongs to the priest. They offer it to the Lord, but then it shall be yours. It belongs to the priest. Nevertheless, the firstborn of man you shall surely redeem, and the firstborn of unclean animals you shall redeem. As to their redemption price from a month old, you shall redeem them by your valuation, 5 shekels in silver, according to the shekel of the sanctuary, which is 20 gerahs. But the firstborn of an ox, or the firstborn of a sheep, or the firstborn of a goat, you shall not redeem. They are holy. You shall sprinkle their blood on the altar, and shall offer up their fat in smoke as an offering by fire for a soothing aroma to the Lord. Their meat shall be yours. It shall be yours like the breast of a wave offering and like the right thigh. All right, verse 15. First issue of the womb, firstborn, man or animal, is an offering to the Lord. It shall be yours. It was given to the God, but the priest got the animals to eat. Now, this firstborn is a big deal in Scripture. Exodus 13:2, sanctify to me, to God, every firstborn, the first offspring of every womb among the sons of Israel, both of man and beast, it belongs to me. Exodus 13:15, it came about when Pharaoh was stubborn about letting us go that the Lord killed every firstborn in the land of Egypt, both the firstborn of man and the firstborn of beast. Therefore, I, this is a generic Jew talking here, thinking on the Passover meal. Therefore, I, a Jew, sacrifice to the Lord the males, the first offspring of every womb, but every firstborn of my sons I redeem. Now, the idea behind this is since God delivered the firstborn of the Israelites owed God the firstborn, because the firstborn should have been killed, just like all the firstborn of Egypt. And so this was just sort of an object lesson to remind the Israelites that they had been miraculously saved from judgment. Deuteronomy 15:19 says, "You shall consecrate to the Lord your God all the firstborn males that are born of your herd and of your flock. You shall not work with the firstborn of your herd, nor shear the firstborn of your flock." So this is a well-established principle. Firstborns, just as the firstfruits, go to the Lord, and then they go to the priest. Now verse 15 says, if it's the firstborn of a man, you don't give it to the sanctuary, because if you did that, you took your firstborn little son and gave it to the priest, and he's going to put it on the altar, you got a human sacrifice. Of course, that's not possible. So what you have to do is redeem that firstborn, which means you give a price, namely 5 shekels. You pay the priest 5 shekels for that firstborn, and you are said to have offered your firstborn to the Lord, and you will have fulfilled your obligation. Now, redemption of unclean animals was done after 8 days, because you couldn't offer an unclean animal on the altar either. So you had to redeem those, just like you had to redeem human beings. Exodus 13:13 says this, "But every first offspring of a donkey," that's an unclean animal, "you shall redeem with a lamb. But if you do not redeem it, then you shall break its neck, and every firstborn of man among your sons you shall redeem." So it took a lamb to redeem a donkey, 5 shekels to redeem a human being, so the priest got the lamb, or he got the 5 shekels. Now, that 5 shekel price was already mentioned in Numbers 3. If you recall, in Numbers 3, the Levites were given to God in place of the firstborn, so they didn't have to pay that 5 shekels. But they were 273 too few Levites to redeem the firstborn of the sons of Israel. And so for those 273 leftover Israelites, somebody had to pay 5 shekels apiece. I think it probably came from a common pool here from the rest of the tribe of Israel to accomplish that redemption. Let me read that, Numbers 3, verses 46 through 47. "For the ransom of the 273 of the firstborn of the sons of Israel who are in excess beyond the Levites, you shall take 5 shekels apiece per head. You shall take them in terms of the shekel of the sanctuary. The shekel is 20 gerahs." By the way, a shekel is about a half an ounce. The shekel of the sanctuary was a standard that was kept in the tabernacle so that there wouldn't be any debasement they didn't have coins, but any, shall we say, lightening of the scales when people were paying people with shekels, which is a weight. Now, the clean animals that are mentioned here, goat, sheep, ox, you can't redeem those. You have to offer the firstborn of the herd or the flock to give to the priest. And that meat of that animal all belongs to the priest, verse 18. "It shall be yours like the breast of a wave offering, which belongs to all the priest, and like the right thigh, which belonged to the officiating priest." So the meat belongs to the priest. We go now to Numbers chapter 18, verse 19. "All the offerings of the holy gifts, which the sons of Israel offered to the Lord, I have given to you and your sons and your daughters with you as a perpetual allotment. It is an everlasting covenant of salt before the Lord to you and your descendants with you." Now, this is still God talking to Aaron, giving the priesthood all these gifts that we've been talking about. Now, this allotment to the priest is perpetual. Now, what does that mean? Forever and ever and world without end? No, it means until the end of the old covenant, which, of course, was ended when the Messiah came. Now, it is an everlasting. That means everlasting is holam, is the Hebrew word there. And that can either mean perpetual in the sense of forever and ever and ever, eternal, or it can mean for a long time. And here it means for a long time, because the old covenant is going to end when Jesus came. Now, what does it mean, an everlasting covenant of salt? Interesting phrase. The NIV Study Bible says the expression remains obscure. Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown says that the expression covenant of salt is a figurative expression because the Lord didn't actually eat salt with the Israelites. Well, if it's figurative, let's see what the figure means. John Gill, Adam Clark, and Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown all agree that the reference is to the fact that the old covenant, that the covenant was incorruptible, inviolable, durable, and perpetual because salt makes meat last long. That's one option. Adam Clark mentions another option as to the metaphor. It could be referring to the meal that the parties ate together at the making of a covenant, and salt was a common article in these meals. So it's just a reference to the covenant that's being made between God and the Aaronic priest. Or it could be, third option, it could refer to the salt that was offered in the sacrifices. The grain offerings actually had salt mixed in. Leviticus 2:13, every grain offering of yours, moreover, you shall season with salt, so that the salt of the covenant of your God shall not be lacking from your grain offering. With all your offerings you shall offer salt. So salt had a lot of symbolism in the Old Testament law. It was in the grain offerings themselves. It was actually even in the burnt offerings, and it was in the incense. Let's look at the burnt offerings, Ezekiel 43:24. You shall present them before the Lord, the burnt offerings before the Lord, and the priests shall throw salt on them, and they shall offer them up as a burnt offering to the Lord. And as far as salt being an ingredient in incense, we see in Exodus chapter 30, verse 35, with it you shall make incense, a perfume, the work of a perfumer, salted, pure and holy. So incense has salt, burnt offerings have salt, grain offerings have salt. So that could be what it's referring to, or it could be referring to a typical covenant meal with salt. Lots of disagreement on that, but it's clear what it means. It means it's going to last. It's going to be pure. It's going to be incorrupt. We go now to Numbers 18, verses 20 through 23. Then the Lord said to Aaron, you shall have no inheritance in their land, nor own any portion among them. Talking about the sons of Aaron. I am your portion and your inheritance among the sons of Israel. Now he's switching to the sons of Levi, verse 21. To the sons of Levi, behold, I have given all the tithe in Israel for an inheritance in return for their service which they perform, the service of the tent of meeting. The sons of Israel shall not come near the tent of meeting again, or they will bear sin and die. That means the non-Levite sons of Israel. Verse 23, only the Levite shall perform the service of the tent of meeting, and they shall bear their iniquity. It shall be a perpetual statute throughout your generations, and among the sons of Israel they shall have no inheritance. Now these verses refer to the fact that both the priests and Levites didn't get any land when Joshua parceled out the land. They had no inheritance in the land. But God said, that's all right, I'm your portion. In verse 20, I am your portion. Now what he means by that is all the sacrificial offering to God, the priests got to eat some of them and keep some of them. The tithes, the first fruits, they belong to the priest. And so that's what God meant when he says, I'm your portion. He means I'm giving you all this stuff. It's not land, but you're getting all it, getting all this other priestly stuff that's going to take care of you. The purpose of this portion was so that the priests would not have daily care, so they could focus on doing their priestly duties, as Jameson Fawcett Brown says. Verse 21, same deal. You don't have a portion. Actually, he doesn't say to Levi, you don't have a portion, but he does say, I've given all the tithe in Israel for an inheritance to you, Levi. You're going to get it in return for all your work in the tabernacle. Now, this tithe, of course, was owed by the ordinary people of Israel, and they gave it a tenth of their crops and their animals and so forth to Levi, and that's how the Levites were supported. Well, it actually does say later on, past verse 21, you get to verse 23, God tells the Levites, among the sons of Israel, they shall have no inheritance. So the idea is you don't get any land, but you will get a tenth, a tithe from the Israelites, a tenth of the produce of the land. Now, as it turns out, the Levites actually got a little bit of land. Here's how that worked. They got 48 cities, each forming a square of 4,000 cubits, and they got 2,000 cubits of ground around each city. So the total of the land they possessed was 53,000 acres. And the Levites also got first fruits in a certain parts of the animals which were killed. I don't have the verse for that where they received the first fruits. I wish I did, but I don't. But at any rate, they got a little bit of land. They got some scattered cities. And they got a tenth from all the sons of Israel. And of course, the service that they performed for this was multifarious, but just to summarize, they guarded the temple, the tabernacle, from unclean persons. They helped the priests with the sacrifices. They take the animals, kill the animals, drain the blood, give the blood in the bowls to the priest. And then they would carry the tabernacle and the furnishing and all the vessels of the tabernacle on the trip. They did other things like, for example, they performed singing services in the tabernacle and so forth. We now go to Numbers chapter 18, verses 24 through 26. For the tithe of the sons of Israel, which they offer as an offering to the Lord, I have given to the Levites for an inheritance. Therefore I have said concerning them, they shall have no inheritance among the sons of Israel. Then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, Moreover, you shall speak to the Levites and say to them, When you take from the sons of Israel the tithe which I have given you from them for your inheritance, then you shall present an offering from it to the Lord, a tithe of the tithe. Now verse 24 says, For the tithe of the sons of Israel, that means a tenth of the produce of the land, they offer that to the Lord, which they offer as an offering to the Lord. So the tithe first goes to the Lord, and then the Lord gives it to the Levites for an inheritance. So as a result of that, as John Gill says, the Levites were dependent directly on God, but only indirectly dependent on the Israelites. Now in verse 25, God switches from speaking to Aaron to speaking to Moses. Then the Lord spoke to Moses. Moreover, you shall speak to the Levites and say to them, Why not to Aaron? Well, this is John Gill's speculation. I like this. Aaron is just about to get a tithe of the tithe. Aaron and his sons, the priests, are going to get a tithe of the Levites' tithe. Now, if Levi is to say this, speak to the sons of Israel, Aaron. Excuse me, if Aaron is to say this, speak to the sons of Israel, Aaron, and tell them that, or speak to the Levites, Aaron, and tell the Levites that you are to give me and my family a tenth of all your tithe. Well, that sounds a little self-interested, does it not? And so John Gill speculates that Moses was going to be the one saying this. Levites, take a tenth of your tithe that you've gotten from the people, and you give it to the priest, to Aaron. The tithe, by the way, was taken at the time of the harvest, because that's when the tithe was, that's when you could do a tithe, when you had the crops in order to tithe. Well, that would be at harvest time. We go down to Numbers 18, verses 27 through 28. Your offering will be credited to you. Again, this is Moses, God telling Moses to tell the Levites. Your offering will be credited to you as if it were your grain from the threshing floor or the full harvest from the wine press. You are to present an offering to the Lord from every tenth you receive from the Israelites. Give some of it to Aaron the priest as an offering to the Lord. Now, of course, this offering here is a tenth of the tenth, tithe of the tithe. Now, what it means is that your tithe of the tithe will be credited to you as if it were your grain. That means if it was your grain from the threshing floor, that would be yours. It would be considered yours. Full harvest from the wine press, it's yours. And so, likewise, the tenth of the tenth, it's yours to be given to the priest. In other words, what this means is that your duties for the paying the tithe will be credited to you and will be marked off with you just as if you were given credit for owning the grain on the threshing floor or the full harvest in the wine press. Let me state that again. What this verse is saying here is, if you were a non-Levite and you took grain from the threshing floor, wine from the wine press, and gave it as a tenth, it would be credited. Someone might say to you, Ah, but Levite, but Mr. Levite, you didn't grow that grain and you didn't make that wine, so therefore you're not really giving to the temple. You're giving out of somebody else's offering. You're giving from the ordinary Israelites' offering, and so it's not really yours. And so you don't get full credit for that. And what Moses is saying here, what the text is saying is, no, that tithe that you get from the people is yours, just like somebody who grew grain or somebody that made wine. It's yours, and when you give it, it's given for out of your account. We go down to Numbers 18, verses 29 through 32, and we'll finish up this audio. Out of all your gifts, you shall present every offering due to the Lord, from all the best of them, the sacred part of them, the sacred part from them. Now, this is God still talking to Moses to talk to the Levites. You shall say to them when you have offered from it, you, Moses, shall say to them, the Levites, when you, Levites, have offered from it the best of it, then the rest shall be reckoned to the Levites as the product of the threshing floor and as the product of the wine vat. You may eat it anywhere, you and your households, for it is your compensation in return for your service in the tent of meeting. You will bear no sin by reason of it when you have offered the best of it, but you shall not profane the sacred gifts of the sons of Israel, or you will die. Now, verse 29, still talking about the Levites, as I just said, out of all your Levite gifts, you shall present every offering due to the Lord. And that would be the tenth of the tenth to the priest. Says it's every offering due to the Lord, but that's what he's talking about is the tenth is due to the priest. It's the sacred part from them. So the tenth of the tenth was sacred. The tenth that's going to the priest, it's sacred. It's holy. Verse 30 says, you shall say to them, to the Levites, when you have offered from it, from your tithe, the best of it, the tenth of the tenth, the best of it. Notice that the Lord got the best portion. And when we say the Lord, that's talking about the priest, got the best portion. Then the rest shall be reckoned to the Levites as the product of the threshing floor and as the product of the wine vat. That's talking about the rest, the 90% that is not given to the priest. The 90%, it belongs to the Levites. It's just as if they had grown it themselves, even though it was given to them by the people at large. It would be just as they were the product of the threshing floor, as if they had grown it themselves, or the product of the wine vat, just as if they had gone out and stomped the grapes themselves. Again, all this is to make everybody clear that the Levites have a legal right to support, and don't you try to take it away from them. It's very clear. Verse 31, you may eat it anywhere. That means the tenth that you receive from the people. They didn't have to eat it at the tabernacle like the priest often did, as John Gill says. They don't have to go to the courtyard. You can eat it in your house. You and your households, that would include, of course, women and children, and servants too. This is opposed to priests eating in the tabernacle in the courtyard where no servants and women were allowed there. But this tithe could be eaten anywhere. It needed to be. Otherwise, the priest's families would be in bad shape. They wouldn't get, or the Levites' families would be in bad shape because they wouldn't be able to use the gifts that were given to them, because they got to feed their family and support their servants. Verse 32, you will bear no sin by reason of it when you have offered the best of it. In other words, you could give your tenth and then you're free to do the rest of it, whatever you legitimately may want to do with it. But you shall not profane the sacred gifts of the sons of Israel. And the sacred gifts is referring to that tenth of the tenth that they were supposed to give to the priest. And you would profane that sacred gift by not giving it to the priest. If the Levites enjoyed it for themselves and didn't give the tithe, they will die. I just had a long discussion with a friend of mine about tithes. He still, unfortunately, believes that he's under the Old Testament law of the tithe. And, you know, if you're going to be under the law of the tithe, well, let's be under the law. And under the law says, you don't give your tithe, in this case, Levites, you die. Well, does that apply to Christians today? I hope not. The New Testament law of the tithe doesn't exist. There's no mention of the tithe in the New Testament church, not once. The silence is deafening. I know it's an argument from silence, but the silence is truly deafening. Something so important that every Christian organization and church that I know of that deals with today is give your tithe, give your tithe, give your tithe. And it's not even in the scripture about the New Testament church. The New Testament law of Christ is this: God loves a cheerful giver. Give, and it will be given unto you, pressed down, without measure, flowing out of your bosom. Give. That's the standard, not a tithe. It's a voluntary thing. Ladies and gentlemen, we are now finished with Numbers chapter 18. We are now prepared to march forward to Numbers chapter 19. In verses 1 through 22 of that chapter, the entire chapter, we will look at laws for purification. I hope you stay tuned for that audio, and I hope you enjoyed this one.